Welcome to October's version of SQL Unplugged. How many of you are familiar with SQL Unplugged? Most of you. Okay, good. If you're not, SQL Unplugged is our monthly live show through Channel 9 where you get to spend a quality half hour with Sean Bice and Rohan Kumar and ask them questions about the internal workings of the SQL Engineering Department. Right? If you want to know when the next show is and when we publish the shows, I would highly suggest you follow the Twitter handle at SQL Unplugged. Because that's when we make announcements about when the next show is. Typically the third week of every month, but depending on schedule, that may have to change, right? So this is your opportunity right now to ask questions. Any question, we will not be, or Sean and Rowan will not be answering discussing NDA content, right? But because this is an open community, not just MVPs, okay? Yeah. So, turn the time over to you. You may ask questions if you want to use the mic back there as the mic, but most of you are sitting on the front row, right? So shoot away, ask questions. We'll be going 35, 40 minutes, roughly. Let's say 30 to 40 minutes. So ask any question about SQL Server, Azure SQL Database, anything SQL related, right? You guys know who Sean and Rohan. We don't need to have them introduce themselves, right? Okay, good. They know who you are. Right.
All right,
fire away.
Okay. So I've got to say some customers that think having Azure piece a week, they're always using SQL Server. So I'm wondering if what points the inflection point at Carson and coaches go to them against how coaches decide to make that jump. I wonder if you have any points to
that. Do we have a what? Yeah, the question is, if you guys couldn't hear it, is, you know, how does a customer sort of reason something like Azure Data Lake versus, they got a whole bunch of choices. Is there a whiteboard in here? I'll draw a picture for us. There isn't. Let's just, do you have a Surface?
I do.
We'll just make this up. This is the picture that I draw.
You want me to pull up paint or something?
I just need a thing that I can draw, a box and some lines. I'll just use my finger. Can't you write on these things?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Share this.
We're sharing the screen.
You know how you can just write with a pen?
You want a pen?
I got a pen.
Yeah, I'll do this. I think this will work. Will this work? Cool. All right. So this is, I would just sort of offer this as a way to think about our data platform as a whole. And I'll make it super simple, but this works. Like usually, you know, when I get asked that question from customers, this is where I always start. It just helps reason choices. But I'll draw a box and one of these classic four quadrant guys. And then that makes sense so far, right? Okay.
Slow down.
Oh my gosh, it is Windows. All right, question number two. And then I write, hope you guys can see this. Then I write, relational. Then I write beyond relational. You know, that makes sense so far. And then I write cloud. And then I write on-prem. Make sense so far? So remember, you're just talking to a customer right now, and they're like, hey, you know, what's an easy way for me to begin to have a conversation with you? And then I'll just pencil in here, like relational on-prem. I'll just write SQL Server. Sort of everybody gets that pretty quickly. And most big customers, this is where their whole world began, in this lower left quadrant. And, you know, oftentimes, like right here, what I'll say is, if you're talking to an enterprise, like this is probably where you began. You may have Hadoop in your environment, which sort of would kind of go beyond relational. So from a Microsoft perspective, I would just write APS right here. And then I would call out the Hadoop region. And then I'd note like, you know, Cloudera as well as Hortonworks, et cetera. Most people get it. And then cloud relational, all I do is just pencil in SQL DB, and then I'll put SQL DW. And then for beyond relational.
Okay. Maybe, it's gonna be like I did it.
Maybe this is so revolutionary that guy just fell out of his chair. All right. Are you ready to demo this, Rohan?
Yeah.
Okay. And then over here, I'll write data lake. And then where I'm going with this is a story in the middle, but. So everybody sort of gets this. Then you go, hey, you know, you may the lower left quadrant could have been your sort of birthplace, and then you know some customers sort of are thinking across that bottom row, and then they're thinking like, hey, how can I take advantage of these rows on the top? And then to just sort of warm people up to the idea here is I'll say, hey, you know, if you're let's say a car manufacturer, for example, and you're going to put devices in cars. And imagine all these vehicles emitting telemetry. Like, you're not going to emit telemetry. Like, if I change a color here, like, you know, you're not going to emit any of that to the lower row at all. Like, that just doesn't. The economics of that just don't make sense. So, and I'll usually sort of underline data lake is an awesome thing for that because you get the economics of the cloud, you're paying pennies on the dollar for storage, you get all kinds of compute, and I just leave it at that. Most people go, oh yeah, I get that. And then you could that's kind of how I get people to think of data lake right away, just from because the scale and what it can do is incredible. And then I kind of say, hey, you know, you'd imagine over time, all four of these quadrants could fill up with data, the data gets heavy, and we don't believe architecturally you bring all of this data to one quadrant to compute it. So then I erase, let's see if this works. Does this work? No. Does this thing work? Oh yeah, cool. Then I erase the middle, and then I draw a circle. And I'll do this in black. And then you just say, hey, look, we architecturally and fundamentally believe technically you bring compute to where the data is. So then most people are like, okay, I get it, makes sense. And then I'll write federated query in here. And then I'll write, you know, Power BI, because, you know, of course you want to connect visualizations to wherever your data is. Then I'll write ML in here, just in the spirit of bringing machine learning to the appropriate places. And then I'll write ADF. You know, like, hey, we have this thing called the Azure Data Framework, and if you do have a job that sort of you want to schedule and sort of move some data through. So that's the picture I use with every single customer that I talk to. And what I found is if you can get people to understand this, you can have an excellent discussion. Because without it, what happens is, like, you don't have the mental model. Now, granted, I actually went to school to be a mechanical engineer first, so I draw everything, but this drawing sort of really simplifies a great question you're asking. And then what you could do is say to the customer, what kind of scenario are you trying to get after? So if somebody says back to you, you know, we'll use the car one because I think people get it. You know, I'm thinking about putting sensors in all these places and I have a ton of data. Then you can sort of ground that out in data lake straight away. If you're talking to somebody who says, you know, I've historically been in that lower left quadrant, but I need greater scale for a relational data warehouse like DW. I don't want to actually deal with it. I just really would love to get the economics of the cloud. Then you could start talking about SQL DW and, you know, is it that you're trying to do some kind of relational analytic queries and that's good for you? And then what you'll find is, depending, we were saying this yesterday, the key thing is once you get this model, this is the discussion that you want to have. And it's all about the scenario. So, because that scenario is going to dictate what technologies you use in this simple picture and where it would be. And does that make sense so far? Yeah.
It's B2C. So yep. I'm going to learn something. It's our consumer market, and it's going to be data, and so I started designing that before data lake came on board. So course, and then I had to do to clean that to some other.
Yeah.
And then going back to the customer to say, you know, I think, oh, it's not just a simple thing who's coping just now. When they start to test more units, I think they can test. And I can sell for that cap. There's the limit of units you can sell because a bit of programming in order to make the data go to their database, which I've been looking at, and that's really complex. And so my thought is actually, why don't I just try and port into data? I'll need to run the local compiler for the file.
Oh, you totally could. And my hunch is like, you know, what you could end up doing is starting there, and but you wouldn't be surprised. Like, I don't believe that. I would tell you the learnings I have in sort of talking about this for a long time. Well, a long time could be what we do for a living, a month. But I find a lot of customers, once they get going, they actually, if it's somebody who's born in the cloud and they're not on-prem, this is all you're talking about is that top row. And there are a lot of folks that will show up like that. Or if you're working with a big enterprise, you're gonna, what I found is we start in this lower row and we work our way up. But it's not that you're trying to arrive in one row or any one quadrant, but kind of like you just said, if it's IoT, Data Lake's gonna be an awesome thing for you. And then what I found is that once customers kind of get going on this, it turns out that a lot of folks are in three of these quadrants. You know, it could be like you're processing data, and I'll just go sit down now, but you're processing data, maybe you sort of, you're collecting it, you process it in that upper right quadrant. You could move some of that data, which we see a lot of customers do, into a relational model. Then you'll see computation that happens there. And then if they have an on-premise system, et cetera, then they'll start saying, well, hey, how do I orchestrate some of this workflow? And you say, hey, ADF, and well, how do I visualize this stuff, Power BI, et cetera. But that's what I would suggest is maybe trying that out, because it's not intimidating for any customer, and it's pretty easy.
So beyond ingestion, I mean, you have, What else do you plan to do once you get the data into the data lake?
What you need to do is if you have a number of scenarios, what you want to do is get the customer's access to the data. So I kind of asked this to the channel of the keywords, because I think I'm not too long. I'm set with other program. So I'm trying to figure out how that's going to work. Because I think obviously I don't want to get the customers a website, but then they speak to the data room and want to find somebody by giving them access just to their data.
Today you said this thing is running with on SQL DB. So there's the whole application is using T SQL on SQL DB.
Yeah, it's still in session mode. So we're typing stuff out. We are typing stuff out from the device side of things, and I'm doing the first scenario was happening on the thing. I'm happy to say that the customer has got secrets and themselves without Azure. Something happened to the devices.
Yeah, and then sort of remove around the room. So to give everybody a chance here, it's you're asking a great question. And, you know, like you brought up security, you know, the thing that when you start, so I could actually fill out these quadrants with all sorts of products, but, you know, what you might find is that, if they need to be on-prem for some reason, that's no problem. If you need to stretch that relational data into the cloud, no problem. Some services have TDE, you know, others, you just want to pay attention to like, where does that kind of stuff show up? But that's maybe a way to just sort of get after it. But my hunch is I guess the meta point here is it's not like one quadrant solves all things, I guess is maybe a good way to think about it.
Okay, we got to move on. So Nico, go ahead, then we'll get to you, Alex Shirley.
Just a small comment. I would love to see this kind of the documentation available to everyone.
Yeah.
This is simple. This is something that can be shown not only the customers you meet one by one, but we can point our customers and say, this comes from Microsoft. You can navigate yourself even without our support. Once you need, we're here to support you.
Yeah,
Nico, I'm happy to print this out and give it to you.
Okay.
Yeah, no, you're actually spot on. What I will tell you is, you know, we've been working on trying to simplify this stuff. You know that old, I think that saying is like, I would have written you a shorter letter if I had the time. This is one of those. This took us a long time to sort of get to. I'm just being completely transparent. But the internal ecosystem of Microsoft is demanding that that picture, that frame, make its way into the marketplace in a hurry. So there are literally people working on the beyond my chicken scratch picture, but this as the way we talk about our data platform as a whole. This is no joke. Like, you're talking an army of people, and they're trying to get it to all the sellers. They're trying to sort of make sure that this is not the description of all things, but to your point, it's a way for people to self-navigate. And then I know there's video recordings. I mean, they're going big on it. This isn't going to be something off on the side. And this is like urgent big. So I think you'll see this kind of become a little more public here in short order.
So once you were painting this picture, I was reminded of these old times, you know, 2008, when you had like a circle with the reporting services, analysis services. It was a good thing.
Yeah, they're the system's on it. My guess is in probably the next 4 weeks, you'll see that materialize in a very, very, just, you know, when the company decides to go do something big, it can show up the right way, and I think that's actually happening right now.
Good question. All right, Alex?
Related to the problem there, just in the middle of an ADF, one of the problems that I've got is moving data around the different quadrants. Now, that's what ADF's for. But ADF is a data movement tool and an orchestration tool, not a data transformation tool. In there, if you actually want to do any transformation in that process of moving things around, on on-prem up to SQL DB, for example, you wouldn't necessarily want to do an ELT environment, so you need that transformation tool, so you could only use SSIS either on-prem or hosted in a VM. It's not a cloud-hosted solution. Is there a roadmap for ADF to actually get essentially data flow pipeline and SSIS into ADF or something equivalent?
Do you know?
No, I mean, the way to do what you're actually suggesting in terms of transforming the data at this point is to essentially use SSIS as a part of the ADF workflow. And SSIS is not a PaaS service today, and actually I don't know what their plans are. But I know folks who have basically used ADF to migrate data from on-prem to Azure, transform it using SSIS as a part of the ADF workflow. That happens all the time. I know it's not what you're asking for. Right.
Yeah, the guy to ask, Mike Flasco is the person who leads ADF, but you can just send me an email, because I actually believe their charter is to subsume these things as a whole and present ADF as a sort of consistent way to do what you were just describing. But just send me an email, seanbi@microsoft.com, and then I can connect you to Mike, and then he'll get an answer to you straight away.
Awesome. All right. Yeah, Aller.
This morning, Rima and Dr. David mentioned that you should never move the data to the computation. You should move the computation to the data. Taking this kind of claim and apply this to this kind of cloud structure, is there anything like make it easier for users to synchronize data with the cloud? Of course, we have ADF or something like this, but this is most of the times a very time intense and resource intense thing. Is there anything that you have in the pipeline that makes synchronizing data with on-prem easier? So like a point-and-click thing, like a replication thing. Of course, you can do that.
There is replication between on-prem
and
yeah, but you know, easy.
Yeah, replication, but easy, is that what you said?
So you mean in terms of just so the physics of moving data is the physics of moving data. I mean, that's going to take. I think the point that I haven't watched the keynote, but I'm pretty sure there's the general thing around, you know, if you think about any sort of query that you want to execute faster, it's much better to send the code to the data than the data to the code. This is just generally like a key design point in anything that we build. So yeah, there is investments, I think, replication, there's work that's going on to basically have your on-prem database sort of, you know, connect with Azure DB as an example and do the replication. And yeah, I think ease of use will be a key thing that will go land there for sure. But in terms of, you know, I just want to make sure that this ease of use doesn't mean it'll be fast. I mean, there is physics in terms of migration, so.
If I may suggest, that would be a very awesome way of being able, like, imagine to back up my data into some hard drive, to send it to Microsoft Data Center, and it's actually, a lot of times, it's much faster. And I know some companies in the US, in order to transfer the data from one coast to another coast, this is what exactly they do. So if Microsoft would allow, just for us, like some kind of a way, like, I don't know.
Ship your hard drive.
Ship your hard drive.
Because do we have a service that does that?
Not a service.
Not Express Drive, it's something else.
Yeah, you can just encrypt your drive with BitLocker and send it to Microsoft.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it's actually been there for almost a year and a half.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everyone was made the
Yeah.
Okay.
And what does
I mean, at this point, if you think about from a popular storage format that's used for transfer, especially for the mobile apps, I mean, it is JSON, right? That's sort of being used. Now, in terms of, I mean, this includes things like pictures, video, everything sort of getting pushed out, right? So I wonder when you say binary data, are you talking about, like, is it just the payload that's very big? I mean, what is it about JSON that won't work with it? And you've tried chunking the data into and all that?
Yeah, we tried to look at that. So we have the problem is I'm trying to do streams for this process as well. So I'm trying to work with
them on this constraints. I mean, even industry wide, I don't know. I mean, other than JSON, I haven't heard of any that's super popular for mobile devices.
You can send the email because I'm not connecting with some of the academia as well as, you know,
Yeah, just send me an email as well, and then I can connect you with the IoT team pretty quickly. It sounds like that's probably a good place for you to sort of connect with, and that's maybe they can just vet out some of these scenarios with you directly. That's easy to do.
Cool. All right, next question. These are great questions, by the way. Next question.
A little bit of an outsider kind of point of view. I've looked at your diagram here, and here I come from an enterprise business who for years has built reports on systems such as business objects, SQL Server reporting services, and the like, and they're very much heading towards the data lake, business analytics, Power BI place. But I don't feel like they're on the right journey. I feel like they're still using SQL and expecting it to perform in such a manner. They're trying to get users to hit constant tables, and it's causing all kinds of performance issues for us. How have you gone with customers that you've experienced on kind of showing them the new journey? Like, as a developer, if I feel my organization isn't necessarily the right path, is there a way that I could help show them that you've experienced?
Yeah, and then when you say the, just help me understand a little more context on the, so you started, you're coming from an enterprise background, which is the bottom row here to keep it simple.
Yes.
And then the path that you don't feel comfortable with yet is, say that one more time.
Okay, so we have an AWS appliance on-premise.
Yeah.
And so in my mind, I'm looking towards SQL DW. I'm looking towards data lake from what I've been hearing this week. These things sound fantastic.
Yeah.
However, in some ways, I see the use that we have in APS is very different to how our management are expecting it to work. So they want to be able to open it to the entire business and have them just smash it.
Oh, I got you. I got it.
Not what it's for, right?
Yeah, well... I like the qualifier on management too.
Yeah. I
that's you, man.
I apologize.
It's all good. It's late
this
today.
This is just recorded, no problem.
Yeah. You'll notice I'm behind the camera.
Yeah. Yeah, he is management.
Matthew, could you turn the camera?
Wise to face.
Okay, so in your scenario, to be clear, APS actually belongs in two places on that lower deal. APS belongs over on the left lower relational side, because as well as, you know, as a product, that's the only place it belongs. And then I'm literally just talking about the relational MPP aspect. So you say, hey, I think I'm going to have about a petabyte's worth of data, which would then suggest you're going to scale out and you need some kind of MPP thing. APS with that Hadoop region is the only reason I wrote it over on the lower right. So you're saying, you know, with APS, the nice thing about APS is that it's an appliance, and the argument is you plug it in and it's supposed to just go. The reality is, though, if the system's just going to, quote, hammer it like you're talking about, and it needs to, if you sort of guess the scaling of it wrong, to your point, it's not like racks just show up. You know, that's where I think you're going with this. And then, so what a lot of customers will do in that particular context, or a way to go back to your leaders or the set of folks that you're working with, the nice thing, so SQL DW is effectively APS in the cloud. That's it in a nutshell. And it's the fundamental difference is that have you seen a SQL DW demo yet?
Yeah, we have. Exactly why I raised this question. I'm sitting there going, all right, what's the on-prem versus the cloud solution? And I'm seeing DW as...
Yeah, so what SQL DB, you know, SQL DB, just think of that as, you know, a relational OLTP workload, et cetera. What SQL DB is to SQL Server, SQL DW is to APS. And that's the mental model. And then you could use this picture with your team. And then the real difference for SQL DW is, if you can move a slider bar from left to right, that's how fast you can scale compute. So it's kind of hard to make a mistake in that, you know, there's two things that matter in that upper left quadrant with DW is, one, that we separate compute from storage. So whatever data you put up there, you're paying pennies on the dollar. And then a lot of folks are like, hey, look, why am I paying for compute if I'm not using it? Especially in a DW workload. Like, I do end of day, end of week, whatever. Why are you charging me for compute? So we took that at a design point, separated the two. So you basically can start off at a slow scale unit. You just literally open the portal, you can move the slider bar. And the mental model is that's just like ordering additional racks, if you will. And then the best part is when you're done computing, you just basically pause compute. And you're not paying for it anymore. So once people hear that, they're like, Okay, I totally get the economic, and is the way you describe it, because it, I don't know how you could sort of keep up with a load like that. The other thing I will tell you, especially with like what hardware's, let's finish here one sec. The other thing I would tell you what a lot of people I see customers doing is they set up a lot of these data warehouses. It's not like one size fits all.
Yeah.
That is a pattern that is, I mean, we see even with our own, some of our super big internal systems, it's, you know, a lot of folks will stand up a whole bunch of these SQL DWs, if you will. But the economics, the scaling ability that you have there is sort of unmatched. And we don't talk about this publicly yet. We will pretty soon. But just remember, I remember we're, this is recorded right now.
Stop recording.
What, you know, just APS is SQL DW in the cloud. So the a lot of this thing, like you got to imagine over time, there's going to be a really nice connection between those two.
We've had some very good discussions to that.
Okay, good. So, good.
And I appreciate your answer, and I'm glad it's recorded because we didn't speak before, and I'm going to go back to my management
and give that answer. And certainly edit
this video.
Yeah.
It supports my line of thinking. So.
Yep. Yeah. What were you saying?
My suggestion was, can you do this with PowerShell, where you when you set up your processing, you scale out, so you add more resources, and when it's done at the end, basically in your script, turn that off or go back to less resources. So dynamically allocate more at the end of the day, for instance, for an hour or two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of this works at PowerShell.
Yeah, from an automation standpoint, sure.
One of the things that's been discussed in sessions today is monitoring the performance characteristics of usage of a system and using that to feed back in PowerShell scripts.
Yeah.
Scale up and scale back.
Yeah, that's actually a great idea. So you have absolutely. I mean, the nice thing is the thing, like when we sat down and first started designing this with the team, we weren't kidding about like you have to separate compute and storage, especially for this workload, because it just doesn't make any sense to pay for compute if you're not using it. And then if you move that slider bar, like people are like, okay, I get it, then leads to the programmatic aspect. Now, if you're pulling telemetry, you could imagine, you could build a really nice flow there. So it's, you know, and some of the other things we're doing with SQL DW from a performance standpoint, this is probably going to matter for is premium storage. That work's happening
as we
now.
Speak. Yeah,
you might share some what that really means for the performance of the system.
Yeah, one of the things is for any sort of DW workload, predictability is a lot more important than just the performance of it. You know, if I'm expecting my queries to, you know, my backend queries to complete in 8 hours because my bank's going to open or my systems are going to open, and that's the thing where when we sort of initially separated compute from storage, the storage was actually Azure standard storage, and you know that's essentially doesn't have a governance thing built in, which is depending on the number of other tenants that are using the same storage stamp that you have. You know, your predictability in terms of your number of IOPS that you get varies quite a bit. I mean, it'd be great if, you know, you were the only sort of one playing in that stance, you know, similar to what SQLDB had, if you remember, with the Sava V1 architecture. And whereas what the Azure storage team has done, and I think they've done a fantastic job, is they've actually built in the premium storage offering that they have, very similar to what we have in Azure DB with our new business model and the additions, where they actually govern the amount of I/O that they give you in premium storage. So there's a lot more predictability in terms of the IOPS you're going to get. I mean, it's never going to go beyond what they promise, which is fine. But then I know, when we sort of turn around, when you know you get a DW instance created, then we turn around and create our storage accounts in premium storage, you know that you're guaranteed a certain amount of I/O. And that sort of helps us give a lot more predictability to the same query when it comes back.
I like the idea of a PowerShell script or other automation that automatically assigns more compute power when I need it. But wouldn't it be possible to build that into the product? Just give me a knob that says automatically scale up to a maximum of this, and then implied automatically scale down again when my query is done?
Yeah, oh, for sure. In fact, we sort of do that with SQL DB. So the best thing about the cloud is we don't have to sit around anymore. And imagine what the world's going to look like for 3 years. Hedge 4 bets and pray they're right, right? Because in the old model, you'd sort of have this 3 milestones. You'd ship something, it'd show up on premise, and if you'd wrong, you'd have to wait 3 years again. In the new world we live in, this cloud first, and this is just context to answer your question. We were just driving over here saying, like, we were saying, hey, remember, you know, in the old day, without repeating what I just said, yeah, that's no fun. But in the new day, it's a very temporal environment. In other words, you can build things in pieces, and then you can test it out, see if it's right or wrong, and you can adjust literally week to week and month to month. So we tried out this thing called Elastic Pools. And Elastic Pools is the OLTP way of solving the thing you're just poking on. Can't the system sort of help me with it? And the concept there is, you know how you can have a singleton database in Azure SQL DB? Well, a lot of developers are like, hey man, I actually don't really know what the workload's going to look like. So I have two choices. I can either over-provision the environment, and if I do, somebody's going to come and pay me a visit because of the bottom line. And then if my other option is I under-provision. If I under-provision, it could be a bad customer experience. And developers that have, especially for like SaaS apps where you've got a lot of databases, that's a bad deal. And then we created this thing called an elastic pool. So the mental model is just imagine you got this pool. That pool represents an aggregate amount of compute. You put all these databases into the pool, and then you set min-max thresholds for, like, what's the minimum guarantee that every database should have and what's the max it could burst to. And that system is actually working out really well for us. And then the nice thing is we learn there, then you can take these, because SQL DW is actually built on top of SQL DB, right? So as you sort of learn those mechanisms out, you could imagine what you just asked is not sort of one of these crazy, you know, the building block pieces are there. But where we're starting off with SQL DW is the way it is right now. We're trying to get a sense of, how many people will pause? What is the pattern for when everybody spins up compute? Does it all spin up on Friday, you know, the end of the week or what have you? And then the programming access is there. And then over time, you know, we want to make this thing as simple as we possibly can. And, you know, we've even toyed around with ideas of, remember when we talked about this notion of, some customers have said, can I just say, I don't want to spend more than this much money? Like, could the budget be the policy? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm willing, but then sort of what we found is you kind of get into the budget thing, it can be kind of a, like, well, who controls the budget and so on and so forth. But what a lot of people come back, like literally, I'm willing to spend no more than this dollar amount per month. So just make all the right choices for me. It actually gets super complex underneath the covers because we haven't found a consistent way to do that yet because there's just too many variables. So the next best step is, you know, you sort of programmatically pause compute, you programmatically spin it up. And we're going to learn that way, and then over time, maybe we reach the point that you just described.
Cool.
Yeah, but the potential, but the feasibility of that is not.
I mean, just thinking about having a max burst and a min burst for DW is very similar to what we did with Elastic Pools.
Yeah.
Okay, one last question.
This is what he does to us, and this guy keeps us on time. And the funny thing is when we do Channel 9, Scott's so good at this, because he does it for a living, we can't see anybody. And we're just talking to the intergalactic system, and then these words come through on a screen. And honestly, we try to answer all these questions, but it's kind of fun to be here actually with people.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's actually people out there.
Scott's not used to this.
That's why I'm standing behind the desk. All right, one last question. Oh, and I forgot to mention, every non-Microsoft person can get a limited edition SQL Unplugged shirt.
Oh, and nice.
And if there is any, I do not want to see them on eBay.
All right.
If you have one for Microsoft people, you can grab one.
Okay. What a nice guy.
Yeah. We ordered some special for this. All right, one last question. Make it good. Bueller?
If not, I'd ask, maybe we'll ask a question back. How's the conference going for you so far? Woo-hoo. Good? That's cool. Yeah, a lot of people have poured a ton of energy into, this feels like, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of good stuff here. We were just driving over, I cannot believe how much value is coming out of the entire, in every dimension, from BI to Data Lake, Advanced Analytics. What about the R stuff? Is R, isn't that cool?
Oh yeah, machine learning, right? Yeah. That blew my mind.
Isn't that awesome?
Amazing.
And it's funny when you think about sort of our own jobs here, like this whole notion of, people wanting to build. Like remember a few years ago when somebody would talk about, quote, real time? It sort of would focus in on throughput, and then it would turn into, well, hey, what kind of application needs that? Something with low latency. And then the reality is this notion of building intelligent applications is incredible because like we were saying the other day, like can't every business benefit from learning and adjusting as things happen where time does matter? And then like the demo Rohan was showing with T-SQL plus R, you could imagine, like, we could have a lot of fun with this. I actually got emails last night from customers that were like, my goodness, that's exactly what we wanted. I would have to imagine, like, as we do this together and, you start getting involved with our, you learn a little bit more and you add a little more intelligence. I can't imagine the types of apps that are going to get built, which is it's just different and fun. Feels good.
How does, if you have a client that has Office 365 and domain Active Directory is already federated, does that apply to every single, do you have to do any more federation to take advantage of the Azure domain?
Well, you want to talk about AD with SQL DB?
So can you use the AD security in every single product?
Azure Active Directory sort of is going to get integrated. I mean, it works with SQL DB, and it's going to get integrated. So I just didn't understand when you said you actually have federation enabled in your Office 365 properties. Can you federate out of that into, I mean, that's
yeah, I think the other part of the question is all the data services.
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to have.
Because I know Office 365 runs like on a reduced version of Azure, right? So it has all the functionality, but you can't spin
no, but
in that one.
That's from the back end side, you're correct. But if you take a look at the authentication all the way from Live ID to Office 365 to Azure, all of them is the back end of that is going to be AD.
Okay.
All right, Alex, for you, one last question
for you.
Did you have a question back there? Yeah, okay, hurry up.
Just come back to the R integration.
Yeah.
Which elements of that quadrant are
going to
get that R integration?
All of them.
R's going to, we might as well just go for it right now since we're here together, but R's going to show up in APS. It's going to show up in SQL Server. It's there today. And remember, sort of, all of SQL Server is powered by SQL 16 powers our entire Azure relational platform. So it will literally show up in all four of those quadrants. Yeah, and that's, it's fun because when you think about building an intelligent app, we could really sit here all day and talk about the kind of apps we can build because it's pretty awesome when you think about just embedding R with T-SQL and to the question you're asking is like, does it only work in one? No, it can't work. It doesn't even make sense. So you'll see the way I want to leave you with this parting thought is the way we think about at least the two of us lead the relational assets for the company. So the relational, like we build a relational model and it shows up in five different ways. It shows up in SQL Server Core RDBMS. It shows up as SQL DB, SQL DW, SQL Virtual Machines, and APS. You know what I mean? So that we orient the entire engineering team like that. So we don't have like a SQL Server team. We don't have a SQL DB team. We have a team that builds the relational model. And then that model sort of shows up. And so the nice thing here is when we build security, and it shows up in the relational model. What we've learned is when you, and we were actually structured in the, it's like 3 years, 4 years ago. Yeah, like when we used to be organized in sort of a release-based thing where we did have a SQL Server team and a DB team, and then you end up with these super weird, you know, three different teams all trying to do good work. Some cases you find out two, three teams are kind of doing the same thing, or, you know, one team prioritizes R versus another. That stuff doesn't work. I mean, we learned that the tough way a number of years ago.
Synergy.
Yeah, but now you've got the entire engineering organization pivoted on cloud first. We own a relational model. This is why we build always encrypted, and man, it shows up everywhere. It's fun. It's taken us several years to sort of change our culture and get to this point, but I think we're in a really good spot now. Yeah.
Okay, last question.
Again?
Again. Did you have a question?
No.
All right, that was the last question. All right, hey everybody, thanks for coming. If you have not followed Twitter at SQL Unplugged, so we know the next show is. We'll do it again in November. Thanks for coming. Appreciate it, everybody.
Thank you.